Hello and welcome to another episode of Profit. I'm Cindy Broad, and today I'm joined in the beautiful downtown Vancouver offices by Ian Stalker. Ian is the Managing Director of Helium One. Thanks so much for joining us today,
Ian. Good morning.
How are you doing today?
Very well, thanks.
Good. Well, it's a bit of a cold day in Vancouver today, which
sure is
a little bit not the norm, but glad you could make it into the offices today for an interview. Usually how we start off this show is just we like our investors to sort of get up close and personal with our CEOs, and we always like to start out with a little bit of rapid-fire questioning. Are you up for that this morning?
Let's give it a go.
Okay, excellent. Let's see what we come up with. Okay, so let's start out with, what is your middle name?
I don't have one.
Oh, you don't have one.
I'm actually christened John, but in Scotland, John is known as Ian, hence the reason why you called me Ian Stalker at the start of the interview.
Oh, well, that's very interesting. I don't know if I know many people with no middle name.
There you go. It makes life easier, except when you book a plane ticket and you use the wrong one.
Oh, well, yes, that gets complicated. Okay, what's the last book that you read?
The last book that I read was Cricket of the Taliban.
Oh, that sounds fascinating.
It actually was. It's set in Afghanistan, and it's about a journey that was taken by a group of people to try and get out of the country during the troubles that encapsulated that particular part of the world, and they took up cricket. And obviously next door is Pakistan, and Pakistan's a big cricket country, and so the story ensued.
Oh, wow, that's fascinating. I'll look into that one. That sounds like an interesting read. What was your first job?
My first job, full-time, was in Zambia with the copper mines in 1973.
Oh my goodness, a long time ago.
I was there for 12 years and had two children who were born in Zambia.
Oh wow, that's fascinating. What are your two children's names?
Craig and Kerry.
Lovely. What person, living or dead, would you like to grab a drink with?
The most interesting person I've met is Nelson Mandela when he was alive.
You've met Nelson Mandela.
Yes, so
wow.
It would be hard to sort of beat that as a person to
I'd
have a chat with.
So, wow, that's amazing. Where did you meet him?
In South Africa.
Oh, you did. And what did you do with him when you met him?
Well, I certainly wasn't top of the pecking order, so I was pretty quiet in the meeting, but it was still pretty awesome to be there.
Wow.
And it's hard not to be in awe of such an individual who, with that kind of persona.
Oh, for sure. What an experience. That's amazing.
Terrific.
Yeah, amazing. Can you do an impression of anybody besides Sean Connery, obviously?
Well, that would be the easiest one because I could say Miss Moneypenny. It's, no, Sean Connery's easy. No, not really. I mean, it's Irish accents are easy for us, so we can sort of do some of those guys. But no, it's better I stick to my own personality, I think.
Perfect. Okay, where are you from in Scotland?
Originally the West Coast, a little place called Comores, which is in Ayrshire in Scotland.
Okay. Where is your favourite vacation spot?
I've had the wonderful opportunity of living in many countries worldwide, from the North Pole, became an Australian, lived in Salamanca in Spain, obviously came from Scotland, now I'm in Canada, and lived 30-odd years in Africa. So What I'm going to tell you is that every place has got its own particular attractions. But two places stick out to me. One is the Victoria Falls. It's just one thing that man could not make. It's just so natural.
Beautiful.
It's just unbelievably beautiful.
Yep.
And the second one is a little island called Arran off the coast of Scotland, which is just a very place to go and visit. And the fact you got on a ferry, just the same as you do here in Vancouver, to go to the Vancouver Island, it gives you that impression of going somewhere.
How big is it?
There's less than 5,000 people live in Arran. It's a circumference of 57 miles.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay, well, those all sound like places worth checking out.
Oh, very much so.
Okay, perfect. Ian, that was fantastic. It was great to get to know you a little bit better. So thanks for giving some insight into what you've done and where you've been. That's fantastic. Let's get started talking about Helium One. It's
sure.
A very exciting new company that's coming up. You're anticipating listing on the Australian Exchange. Give us a little bit of background around the company and let us know why you've chosen Australia to list on.
You or maybe the guys listening to this may not be fully aware just what helium's used for in the marketplace today. It is a typical commodity. And most people probably have the idea that helium is the helium gas in balloons, which is part of it.
Right.
But it's significantly greater than that. The 40% of all the helium that's produced in the world today gets used in the medical industry, in MRI scans, for example. So
oh,
an extremely vital part of the world we live in.
Yes.
Another 40% gets used in spacecraft, in rocketry. because it's such a light metal. It's used for weld correction and weld identification in case there's any cracks, etc.
Okay.
And the last thing you want to do is send a spacecraft up into space with a little crack in it. It's not exactly ideal. So
yeah.
It's becoming one of those commodities that, in fact, is in this sort of strategic bracket. And that's why we got interested in it, because it had such a demand and it's not being fulfilled.
Interesting. So what is the supply of helium in the world today?
Generally, it's a byproduct.
Okay.
It comes from hydrocarbons. And as a result of producing hydrocarbons, there's a little bit of helium stuck in it. 40% comes from Qatar. And it's therefore at the end of the production of petroleum and oil and gas.
Okay.
That, of course, brings its own demands, because if you're unable, if you believe that the market that we live in, say peak oil, has come and gone, and we're now living in an environment that people are using in electric vehicles, for example, that are growing in demand, the environmental challenges that hydrocarbon brings when you have the various power companies and power supplies, then if they were turned down, the helium supply would turn down. What's nice about Helium One, it's a completely standalone helium production operation.
Okay, so Helium One, as I mentioned, is currently private. What is the plan and the strategy to bringing the company public in the near future?
Right, we've been working pretty solidly for the last 12 months in putting it into a position where we can take it onto the Australian market. And we expect to be listing there by the end of February of this year.
Oh, fantastic.
So everything is in place. All the due diligence has been done. All the legal procedures have been undertaken. So, you know, we're feeling pretty optimistic about it now, getting it moving. And it's important to get it out there, because as a junior company, it's obviously where you start getting your funding from.
So speaking of funding, as far as making moves to go public, are you doing a raise currently?
We will, concurrent with the IPO itself, and
okay.
We look to bring in roughly about $5 million, maybe $6 million US, and that would be sufficient for us to do the first two or three holes in the area known as Rukwa, which is where our helium project's based in Tanzania.
Okay.
And we would hope that we'd have a little bit of success in those early drill holes, and as a consequence, once we get gas flow, then really, as they say, we're off to the races, because that proves everything that we've put together so far.
Excellent. So you spoke of Tanzania. Can you talk about the location of your projects and properties and why they're there? And is Tanzania a great place to do business? Like, explain that to our investor base.
All right. Look, there is nowhere in the world that is a great place to do business.
Fair enough.
But what you do is you put a team together that's capable of working in most locations.
Yes.
And that's what's important, putting the team together that can manage the ups and downs, the back and forwards. But Tanzania is okay. It's got a history of mining in it. And in fact, I actually was involved in Tanzania back in 1997, 98, when the Geita gold mine, which was then owned by Ashanti Goldfields, was put together.
Yes.
I actually built and constructed it.
Oh, you're kidding.
Unfortunately,
wow.
I go back a long way.
Yeah.
and that's regarded as a jewel in the crown in Tanzania, which is a nice thing to sort of tell investors.
Yes.
That you've got the knowledge of how to work in country, you've successfully built a mine there, et cetera,
absolutely,
et cetera. And so Tanzania has got that history of having a mining culture. It's had challenges recently. I guess the biggest one, and everyone will know about it, was the Acacia drama, where there was some concern about how much, I guess, tax had been paid or not paid, but that's been resolved, and the net output from that resolution is that, once again, Tanzania is open for business, so it's a good place to be.
Excellent.
In terms of the helium, well, it was first spotted by the British Geological Society back in the 50s when they were looking at hot springs, believe it or not, and they measured then that the helium was bubbling up to surface at grades around about 8 or 10%. Now, you asked earlier about where does most of the helium come from, and we said it's a byproduct from oil and gas. It generally runs as a byproduct around about 0.04%. So
okay.
When you've got a 10% helium gas coming to the surface, it's a pretty rich deposit, and that's
right.
Really why we wanted to lock that up under our control, because as a standalone project, it's got the right credentials of grade and, we hope, volume going forward.
How many properties do you have?
We've locked up all the helium environment, if you like, over in that part of the Rukwa Valley.
Okay.
And so in terms of total licenses, we're probably upwards of about 30 licenses. And there's within that priorities, obviously, there are higher opportunities than others.
Excellent. So it's about 4,500 square kilometers?
That's right.
That
it's
right?
A big package, yeah.
Okay. And great. So can you tell us a little bit more about how helium is a strategic mineral. Just, I think investors, especially in North America, may not be as familiar with the opportunity. So if you can kind of give us a bit of background and what it's used for and why it is a strategic mineral.
Well, look, the reason it's become more strategic is the bulk of helium that was supplied in the marketplace came from the land bank based in the States.
Okay.
So they would auction helium out to end consumers, you know, the likes of Air Lindé, Air Liquide, etc., companies like that, who are industrial gas suppliers and, you know, supply the marketplace of for helium, for acetylene, for oxygen, etc. So that particular auction stopped, it ended, and it was advised by the Americans they were ending in 2018. So there's no longer an auction where you can go and buy it freely in the marketplace.
Okay.
So people then have to get access to suppliers of helium. And that means going to places like Qatar. Now, unfortunately for that part of the world, as we know even recently with the, you know, the horrible thing that's just happened in Iran,
right,
it's not an easy part of the world to do business in, and it's really not that safe.
Right.
If you take Qatar away, then you've taken away 40% of the helium supply.
Wow.
So you can see which where there's a commodity deficit already. That threat, and nobody really wants to have long-term contracts there, makes helium a very strategic commodity in terms of getting access to it and getting it from a country that doesn't have political dramas left, right, and center. Whether it's due or not due in terms of that part of the Middle East, I'm not there to predict. But Tanzania, by comparison, is apolitical. So it's a commodity that's in demand, make no mistake about it. Hard to get your hands on.
Right.
Small marketplace, but big enough and growing. And growing, as I mentioned earlier, in the medical side of things, in the space rocketry side of things. And Lockheed Martin, the air company, they have been looking at using convertible blimps, effectively, so air balloons, to use as airlifts to pick up packages from certain areas to others. Because the big difference, when you talk about blimps and sort of air balloons, people go back to what they saw in their school classes of a certain balloon that caught fire called the Heidelberg.
That's right. Yes.
Well, the difference is, of course, helium is non-flammable, unlike hydrogen, which was used at the time.
Right.
So it's much safer.
Interesting. So there is definitely a growing demand in the tech
and science
sectors.
And because of the constraints, Cindy, that existed on the helium supply, to some extent the demand was curtailed anyway. You start bringing in a new supply and you're going to get new usages coming up from it.
Right. Right. So it's a new primary supply out there. And can you speak to how it could replace the U.S. Federal Reserve as a swing supplier?
Well, very much. It's got the grade that we mentioned just a little bit earlier there. When you compare it with what helium is supplied at or produced from in other areas, a 10% versus 0.4 gives you one huge driving force in terms of economics.
Yes.
The other thing it does for you, as I mentioned, it is a standalone helium project. Now, by standalone, it does not need to produce any other byproduct. It doesn't need to produce methane gas, for example, or for that matter, you know, petroleum products. It just is a standalone. That means that you can reflect the market demands much more sensibly because you're not having to say, look, the only reason I'm making helium is because I'm making petroleum products.
Right.
If they don't want my petroleum products, what am I going to do? I can flex up and down. And that makes a big difference too. And then you're in not only a standalone, but you're in a country that is third world, I guess, so there's some benefits in moving into a third world country and helping develop that country. And when we talk about it by comparison to the byproduct system, it's not an environmental negative.
Right.
It's the very opposite. You know, you talk to a lot of people and you mention the word hydrocarbons, and today people are becoming reticent about it.
Oh, absolutely.
And quite right. I mean, we've learned so much in the last 20, 30 years. But in this case, because it's non-hydrocarbon, then you're almost displacing the helium that's coming from hydrocarbon needs. And again, so that's a positive thing in some people's minds.
Yes.
And with the helium supply, just to finish it off, the only other thing that's present with the helium in our gas is nitrogen, which is part and parcel of our atmosphere. So for us, there's no tailings dam or anything like that.
Right.
You just liquefy the helium that's present in the gas and you vent the nitrogen. So it's a very small footprint environmentally thinking about it, and there's no tailings dam to manage going forward. So from an environmental point of view as well as from a commodity demand point of view, it's something to get your hands on.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so what does the landscape look like as far as companies doing similar things, and what positions you to be a company to watch coming forward on the scene, hopefully in February.
Well, you know, Cindy, probably in the last 2 years, the flavor of the month at one stage was lithium. Everyone loved lithium because it's going to be involved, as we said, in electric vehicle batteries. And when you suddenly get that kind of expectation, you get everyone and their son coming on board with a lithium project and a lithium company.
Yes.
The same thing I'm sure is going to happen in this helium space. You're going to get a lot of guys pitching up saying, hey, guess what? I've got in my back pocket a helium project. Well, the difference from us is that we actually have helium bubbling to surface. We know that it's there. What we don't know is what quantities we've got, what we call a resource, which was produced by a North American company, in actual fact, recognized in the gas world. But we have to do the drilling to suit. But at 10% helium, there is nothing in the world to compare with it.
Wow.
And that's what makes a driving force. It's like turning to a gold mining guy, and I've been involved in gold mines myself, and saying, guys, you've got a grade of 30 grams a ton. Well, it is outstanding. It's a world-class number. And the same thing in this one, 10% helium is a world-class number to start with. And that's what will separate the lamb from the sheep.
Oh, excellent. Well, it sounds like you've definitely got some great projects going on. Ian, can you tell me a little bit about your management team and yourself in particular? You have quite a career. You have 40 years experience in mine development in Europe, Africa, Australia. You are also the CEO of Uranium Inc. In London. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. And give me a little bit of colorful black background.
Colorful background.
On your history and experience.
Well, look, you can tell from the color of the hair, if nothing else, that I've been a long time in this industry. It's been 45 plus years in actual fact. And it's been nonstop. And the reason I'm still in it, despite that lengthy time, is because it's fun. And if it's not fun, then why would you do your job, quite frankly? It drives you to distraction. But I've been lucky enough to have been involved in a range of minerals, which includes copper from the beginning. That was through to about 1987, then from gold up in Ashanti in Ghana, where it was another 12 years. We built that company up from 100,000 ounces to 1.7 million ounces. Then I moved into the uranium side of things in 2005. And what occurred at that time, Cindy, is that we just caught the wave of the uranium demand.
Right.
And our little company that was called Uramin, as you mentioned, went from being a 37 million market cap at the time to 2.5 billion sale.
Wow, very successful.
So we all became very happy people as a consequence.
Yes.
But you don't stop what you're doing because, as I mentioned, it's fun. And so I continued in the gold side and then more recently the lithium side, which is why I mentioned it earlier in the interview there. And we were lucky enough to bring a lithium company that was Argentinian based. So we worked there for a little while through to a successful conclusion from an investor point of view. That too was sold in January last year for a nice return on investment for those who took part.
So quite a few wins in your career.
Touch wood, and there's plenty in front of me, yes.
Excellent.
It's been pretty good, so the big man smiled on me.
Yeah, perfect. Anyone else on your management team that you can mention?
We have a good range of people. One of the guys who got me involved in the helium, he caught me last year, in fact. I've only been on it for about 9-10 months.
Okay.
Is a guy called Neil Herbert, who was also involved in the uranium story. So he had a good pedigree from that side. He lives in Portugal now and manages the European side of our business over there. And in some ways, that's closer to Tanzania than I am here in Vancouver.
Right. Yeah.
And then we've got a range of technical people involved, both living in South Africa and living in Europe.
Okay.
And they give us the technical expertise that we need in a distinct environment like helium. And then, of course, in Tanzania, we have our own team that's put together there to manage the Tanzanian situation.
Excellent. Okay, well, Ian, you have definitely made my job fun today. So thank you so much for joining me at the Stockhouse offices today. And it's been a pleasure getting to know you better. Again, it's Helium One, and they are looking to go public in February on the ASX. Thanks so much for joining me. And hopefully we'll catch up with you soon when you guys are public and we can follow some milestones with the company.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian.
We're social at Stockhouse. Don't forget to like our videos and follow us at Stockhouse on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. You'll get updates on all your favorite public companies in North America and every sector of the capital markets. For more in-depth coverage, industry news, and to connect with our investor community on message boards, you can visit our website at stockhouse.com. Also, be sure to visit our new and improved Stockhouse Deal Room on site for unique and exclusive private placement opportunities available only on stockhouse.com.